You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Benedict Jones. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, September 20th, 2018.
So for us, our focus is simply, let's look at the 59. These were 59 little lives that were lost too soon, and we want to do anything we can to prevent that from happening.
The Indiana Department of Child Services published their Childhood Fatality Report from 2016 just yesterday. In today's feature report, WFHB correspondent Annie Aguiar speaks with DCS spokesperson Noel Russell. That's coming up later in the program.
Late last week, electric scooters popped up in downtown Bloomington. Officials say that the electric scooter company Bird provided no warning that they would distribute 100 scooters around the downtown. Our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks area residents their opinion about the scooters. That's coming up later in the program. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana is among states to receive federal funding to fight the opioid epidemic. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced yesterday they're awarding the state over $25 million. The total allocation by Health and Human Services is estimated at over $1 billion this year for all 50 states. The Associated Press reports the funds will largely go to expanding access to treatment and recovery services. Indiana will reportedly receive more than $18 million for state-led initiatives aimed at reducing drug overdose deaths and boosting access to FDA-approved medications for treating opioid abuse. Another $7 million will go to 26 community health centers, academic institutions, and rural organizations to expand access to drug treatment and mental health services. AP reports the opioid crisis cost 130 American lives per day last year.
The U.S. Senate overwhelmingly passed the Opioid Crisis Response Act on Monday. The bipartisan bill aims to combat the opioid epidemic. Several of Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly's provisions were included in the final bill. In a statement, Donnelly wrote, quote, "The opioid abuse epidemic knows no political or geographic boundaries. I am pleased we got this bipartisan legislation through the Senate because communities across Indiana and our country are continuing to face distressing rates of addiction and overdoses." Unquote. According to a press release from Senator Donnelly's office, his provisions are aimed at allowing easier and faster access to opioid abuse treatment. Donnelly's provisions include a measure that would forgive healthcare workers student loans for those working in opioid crisis areas. Other measures Donnelly put forward would require the Food and Drug Administration to clarify how new non-addictive treatments can qualify for approval, as well as requiring clarification on how treatments can be labeled as, quote, opioid sparing, unquote, meaning they reduce the need for opioids. The Opioid Crisis Response Act passed the Senate 99-1 on Monday.
Soldiers from the Indiana Army National Guard are helping rescue and recovery efforts in North Carolina. The Associated Press reports that Indiana National Guard sent two helicopters and 14 personnel to North Carolina in the wake of Hurricane Florence. The Indiana National Guard reported members of the 38th Combat Aviation Brigade, including Black Hawk helicopters, were deployed to Raleigh, North Carolina on Sunday. The deployment reportedly comes after a request for support from officials in North Carolina. Florence made landfall last week, with extensive flooding still being reported across the eastern half of North Carolina. Hurricane Florence has killed more than 30 people in the North and South Carolina and Virginia areas.
The metal fish that tops the Monroe County Courthouse will soon have a name. Commissioner Julie Thomas made the announcement in yesterday's meeting of the Monroe County Commissioners.
Throughout the
year, the bicentennial year this year, since January, we've invited children across Monroe County to submit names for the fish on top of the courthouse. It's been there more than 150 years, and it's never had a name.
Thomas says officials have narrowed the list of proposed names for the fish weather vane on top of the county courthouse to six. Commissioner Thomas encouraged the public to help choose the winning name by voting online at the county's website, co.monroe.in.us. Just search for Name That Fish.
The name that wins the public approval, we're going to commemorate with some sort of a plaque downstairs, but also, importantly, that child will win a $100 gift certificate donated by Downtown Bloomington.
The winning name and its author will be announced at the Canopy of Light celebration on November 23rd.
The Bloomington City Council approved significant and long-term changes in downtown parking and neighborhood zones in its meeting last night. Jim Blickensdorf is the chair of the city's Parking Commission.
As far as on-street parking or metered parking in our community goes, the major changes would be modifying the hours from 9 a.m. start time to 8 a.m. start time. We would also eliminate the free parking in our street lots. And we would then see that the hours of enforcement of all street lots, meters, and garages would be the same.
The base parking fines will be raised from $20 to $30. Regarding free parking, instead of the current 3 hours of free parking now available in city lots, parkers will only get 1 hour of free parking.
And when you consider the enormous costs of parking structures and all of the other operational costs that go into it, not just acquiring the land, not just building the structure, but the everyday ongoing operational costs and staffing required, if we want to have free parking in our community, we better be ready to accept the burden of providing additional structures. We know that our city is growing at about 1,000 people per year. And so a lot of that density is occurring in our downtown area. There are a lot of people who believe that we need additional parking structures. And that's fine. If we do, then we do. But who's going to build them? And who's going to pay for them when we park in them? Is it going to be all taxpayers? Or are we going to shift the burden to the people who are actually parking in them?
The changes are based on an analysis from the Parking Commission and a downtown parking study conducted by consultant Desmond Design. The Desmond Design compared Bloomington's parking rates to cities of comparable size in other states. According to a preliminary financial data from 2017 report, the city operated at a $73,000 loss. In addition, a substantial part of the system cost is paid through revenues from the city's tax increment finance district and revenues from parking citations. Amendments to the parking ordinance would affect neighborhood parking permits and the number of parking permits allowed for some IU Greek houses. Enforcement hours on Friday and Saturday at the parking garages would be extended to 4 a.m. Council members Isabel Piedmont Smith and Blickensdorf discussed the Morton Street garage as an example.
So if you enter the facility on Saturday evening before you go out to dinner, and you decide to Uber home and you pick up your car on Sunday, you will pay for the time that you use from the time that you parked until 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, less 1 free hour.
That's a big change.
Council member Dave Rollo was among those who expressed concern about social equity.
I don't think that the working poor, I don't think that low-income people should be subject purely to market-driven forces, supply and demand. I think that it's our job as a city for correctives to make sure that they have access to the downtown. Market forces are driving people out. It's true that low-income people may not have a car, but it seems as though they need one more than ever if they're being pushed to the periphery of the city. And so I'm concerned about how we address that in the future. I think a lot of my colleagues are concerned about this, and so it's something we need to work on.
Under the new ordinance, most parking rate changes will go into effect beginning next year. In the same meeting, the City Council approved changes to the city's firearms code that would allow for a deer call this winter at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve. The cull would be coordinated by White Buffalo Incorporated and would be carried out by local hunters. The city contracted with White Buffalo on a 2017 deer cull for more than $43,000. Officials estimate this year's cull will cost much less thanks to a $16,000 grant from the state. The city plans to donate the deer meat to local food banks.
The Indiana Department of Natural Resources plans to log a state forest near Kokomo. DNR officials say the logging is aimed at restoring native hardwood trees at Francis Slocum State Forest in northern Indiana. The Kokomo Tribune reports a 91-acre tract of land is being considered for logging. The plan calls for logging to concentrate on removing pine trees in order to create better conditions for deciduous trees. The plans come after the DNR leased parts of Yellowwood State Forest in Brown County for logging last year. Conservation groups worry the logging could cause erosion and disrupt the area's bald eagle population.
French Lick Resort is planning a $17 million expansion. French Lick officials announced the expansion on Monday. The resort expansion would include a six-story addition near the French Lick Casino and a new bar. The Associated Press reports, when completed in 2019, the resort's overall capacity will stand at 742 rooms. French Lick Resort and Casino is owned and operated by the Bloomington-based Cook Medical Incorporated. Officials estimate the expansion would call for an additional 100 jobs for the Southern Indiana Resort. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Neoff. Slotograph Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or online at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
The Indiana Department of Child Services released their 2016 Child Fatality Report yesterday. As WFHB correspondent Annie Aguiar reports, their findings show some improvement.
A new report from the Indiana Department of Child Services shows a decrease in child neglect and abuse fatalities. The report, documenting the 2016 fiscal year, detailed 59 fatalities from cases of abuse or neglect. That's down from 77 cases in the 2015 report. The latest report is the first year with a decrease in child fatalities from abuse or neglect after three consecutive years of rising numbers. Deputy Director of Communications for the Indiana Department of Child Services, Noelle Russell, says that the agency has hope the decrease in fatalities will continue.
Well, of course, we are certainly pleased to see the number of child fatalities due to neglect or abuse go down. You know, we have 59 this year compared with 77 from last year's report, but there's really no magic answer for why that happens. And so as an agency, what we really try to do and focus on is what we can do to prevent even those 59 deaths. For us, we hope this is just the beginning of a downward trend.
The report breaks down 2016 statistics and accounts for every child death as a result of abuse or neglect in the state of Indiana. Some findings in the report include that Marion County had the most abuse or neglect caused child deaths of any Indiana county, at 14, and that biological parents were most often deemed responsible for the deaths detailed. The difference between abuse and neglect is important in understanding the report, as Russell explains.
We have two types of cases that are highlighted in the report. Those that are due to abuse, those are due to neglect. Abuse. Physical abuse is for us defined as any kind of non-accidental physical injury to a child that is caused by a parent or a caregiver that results in or threatens injury. Neglect is a little more nuanced. Some of the things you would think about that would immediately come to mind, a caregiver fails to give food or shelter. We also occasionally have parents who don't seek medical care for a child who is ailing or who don't require their children to get up and go to school in the morning. Neglect has a variety of nuances that if a caregiver is not providing for a child, whether it is food, whether it's education, whether it's supervision, those are things that can be considered neglect. And so these 59 children represent kids whose caregivers failed them in some way.
One case of physical abuse in the report was the death of an infant who was held by her legs and slammed onto cement by her mother's boyfriend, angry from an argument. The boyfriend was convicted of murder and sentenced to 65 years in prison. The baby was 1 month old. The majority of the deaths from abuse or neglect in the report were that of children younger than 3 years old.
Something that we see as a pretty consistent trend, both in Indiana and nationally, is that children 3 years and younger are really the most at risk. And so this is a population we really try to focus on as an agency.
One of the most frequent causes of child fatalities included in the report was unsafe sleeping conditions.
Safe sleep conditions continue to be a problem in our communities, and so we work with the Department of Health, with other state agencies, to really emphasize what we call the ABCs, that children should be alone on their back in a crib. But there are countless other child deaths that result from, you know, things that parents do really lovingly. You know, they put in their child's favorite blanket or their child's teddy bear that comforts them, and that can actually put a child in danger.
One case of unsafe sleeping conditions in the DCS report was the death of a 4-month-old child who was sharing a bed with his mother. The room was messy, and in the middle of the night, the child fell off the bed and onto the floor. When the mother awoke, she found him unresponsive and with a plastic bag covering his mouth and nose. Russell says that educating parents on safe sleep conditions is vital to decrease child fatalities.
When mom is pregnant, are we getting to mom and saying, let's talk about your child's sleeping conditions. Let's make sure we know what is safe. This is really an ongoing effort. We work with the Department of Health and other state agencies to pass out materials to make sure that we're giving parents that new education that they need. And every year, this report really draws attention that this is one of the top things that kills children in Indiana. So for us, this is an ongoing initiative.
Russell says the 2016 Childhood Fatalities Report found a recurring cause of death was drowning due to a lack of adult supervision.
We want to stress as an agency how easy it is for a child to drown when left unattended. This can be a few inches of water in a bathtub. Mom or dad, babysitter, older sibling walks away because the doorbell rings. That 30 seconds, that 2 minutes can be the difference between a child living and dying. On a bigger scale, swimming pools, retention ponds. There are sources of water sometimes we don't immediately take into consideration as being a danger for our children, but it can happen very quickly. And so for this year, this report made us realize we need to do more to talk about supervision in terms of water safety for our parents in Indiana.
One of the drowning fatalities included in the report was that of a 4-month-old child. The child's mother had fallen asleep after working a night shift. She was awakened by her older child carrying the wet 4-month-old, who was unresponsive. While she was asleep, her older child had taken the baby from his crib and tried to give him a bath. Part of the DCS report details stressors on caregivers leading up to the death of children. The 2016 report finds that, in abuse cases, the leading stressor was prior substance abuse. In neglect cases, it was stress caused by insufficient income.
Every year, as we prepare to release this report, which is a tedious, painstaking process with lots of data and lots of paperwork, one of the things that we try to consider is what was going on in the home prior to the death. What stresses was a caregiver under? And in looking at that data, we ask everything from, did the caregiver have their own history of maltreatment as a child? Was the caregiver battling a chronic illness? Were they unemployed? Did they have insufficient income to provide? These are all things we can look at to help us understand what programs are needed to support Hoosiers in an effort to try to reduce child fatalities. Being able to look at those key pieces of data helps us understand areas where our community needs support, because the problem does not start with a child dying. The problem starts with what's happening in the home before we ever get to the point that a child is placed in harm's way.
Russell says that even with all this data, it's impossible to understand every variable that led to child fatalities in Indiana.
There's no good way for us to encompass all of the circumstances that went on in Indiana households that might have contributed to child fatalities that were present last year, that aren't present this year, or are less present. And so for us, our focus is simply, let's look at the 59. These were 59 little lives that were lost too soon, and we want to do anything we can to prevent that from happening.
Russell says the Indiana Department of Child Services will discuss the report in the weeks to come and assess potential policy improvements. For WFHB, I'm Annie Aguiar.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
Bird scooters were recently dropped off in the city of Bloomington, and users have been especially prominent in the downtown and campus areas. Bird is a company that offers the ability for its customers to rent an electric scooter for an initial cost of $1 and then 20 cents a minute. However, the city of Bloomington did not appear to know that the Bird scooters were coming to the city, which seems to be common practice for Bird. Voices in the Street asks its listeners on their opinion of the electric scooter and if they have any concerns with its introduction into the city.
I think they are a great concept in addition to this campus.
Do you think that, like, there's a safety issue?
Maybe if people are doing them, like, drunk or late at night, but that's about it.
I mean, I've been seeing them around. They seem like they're becoming very popular around Bloomington. Just like normal college students, thinking that they are stronger than cars, there are potential problems with scooters because it's just another way students are going to hit a crosswalk even faster without looking at cars. But, I mean, I've yet to see it, but it's probably going to happen. There's probably going to be some safety concerns.
Yeah, I think the new Bird scooters are honestly a pretty cool way to get around campus. They're pretty cheap. My phone won't currently let me download the app because it's all messed up, but once I can, I think I'm going to go ahead and get it because I personally hate sweating my ass off walking to class all the time, so I actually like the new Bird scooters.
Yeah, I've seen them around campus a few times. The only concern I could see with them is maybe some of the college students rolling too quick through stops, just like they do in bikes sometimes. A lot of college kids just don't really look. They don't seem to care.
But for the most part, downtown's pretty bike-friendly. I don't see why it wouldn't be scooter-friendly.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. Someone told me about them literally 2 days ago.
You think that, like, there's a safety issue?
That I hope they don't run over me. Other than that, not really. Same as, you know, with bicycles, skateboards, same thing, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually saw them walking to class, I think a few days ago. I was passing on the sidewalk, and there was just, like, a line of, like, six scooters. And I was like, this is new. From what I, like, heard, it basically you can, I guess, rent a scooter for some amount of time. I don't know, like, the exact, like, how much it is, but I see a lot of people, especially students, using them to kind of get back and forth from class and stuff. So.
How'd you hear about it?
I saw them, and then one of my friends, we were talking about it, because we saw someone pass us on one, and she was saying that they actually were kind of just dropped off in Bloomington without, like, permission from the city. So it was basically like they were, everybody woke up one morning and there were just a bunch of scooters kind of just scattered around Bloomington, so.
Do you think there's any, like, safety issues or anything?
Yeah, I think so. They could probably be looked at kind of similar to bikes. You know, bikes have to follow the rules of the road as if they were a car. If they're driving on the road, or if they're riding on the road because they can't ride on the sidewalks. But there's not specific rules set in place for, I guess, automatic scooters. So I think maybe students, I shouldn't just say students, but those using the scooters may feel like they don't need to follow any type of safety or pedestrian rules while using the scooters.
I mean, if you know how to use them right, then I don't think there's any safety concern.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Andrew McKieran and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Annie Aguiar.
Voices in the Street was produced by Tarek Warner. Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glapp, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.